All right, it's the steering committee, fresh from the BMW driving experience. Now, let's be clear, we didn't go to Atlanta or one of the other locations and pay a bunch of money. This was the traveling show, like the Porsche experience, the driving experience we did a few weeks back, a couple episodes back. Mm-hmm. This was same location, the former Mile High Stadium here in Denver.
Yeah, where the Denver Broncos play.
Yeah, whatever they're calling it.
Not sure what we're calling it these days. Yeah. But that's where the team still plays. So.
Yeah, they got a good parking lot.
A big parking lot, yeah.
Really nice, much like the Porsche driving experience that was there. Really well organized, really well run. Some mm-hmm. nice folks running the show.
Yeah.
Met some nice people. I was really impressed with this one by the parking lot. Now, you may recall, Doug, we parked in the wrong parking lot the last time, so you didn't get to see what people drove to the experience.
Yeah.
I think we took more pictures in the parking lot.
There was some really interesting stuff in the parking lot.
An M2CS, a brand new one with the German plate. There was shout out, met some really nice folks here. Austin, I think that was your yellow
S4. We spotted your S4.
Your B8, nice car, man. There was, what else was there? Some interesting stuff. The
There's
couple
lots of,
diesel
lots of BMW
wagon.
Wagons.
Yeah,
just, love that.
It was definitely an enthusiast lot. There was an 86 that was all kitted out.
Yeah.
All kinds of good stuff.
Not to mention a sweet 2005 Subaru Legacy GT.
Like I said, full of enthusiast cars. It was really nice. It was a little different than the Porsche one in that we got more autocross laps. This time, the Porsche one, you may recall, new Cayman GTS 4.0 and then the new 992 C2S, both PDK. This was the M44i xDrive?
XI.
Okay.
Yeah,
is that what it is?
M4,
I don't know.
4 XI coupe.
It's the coupe. It's the coupe. Step just under the M3.
Basically,
Just found out those start at 59.9.
Yeah,
and I'm sure the ones we were driving were spec'd to a higher level.
Yeah,
really pretty car. You know, the big nostrils, less of an issue in person, I'd say.
Yeah,
especially with the front plate to block it off. I mean, we've seen them before, but this is the first time I've driven one. One of the new generation. They had an M3 there too with a stick, but that wasn't for driving. That was just for looking, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And people were really going at it.
They had an auto course set up. They had three groups of people, and they put two people on one auto course track, which is what
autocross
we were on,
course. Yeah.
Or auto course track. Yeah. Or auto course. And so we had, there was probably, there are eight cars in general kind of rotating in and out.
Different colors.
Probably about four cars on the track at a time.
Well, it's like you go to the amusement park, you want to get the good color or whatever. You know, I had my eye on that green one. Yeah,
that green one was nice. Yeah. That sort of slate blue, you know, light blue.
And
one
was I was
nice
reminded white is a great BMW car.
Yeah,
you know, a non-metallic white on a BMW is really, really sharp. These may have been metallic, but anyway.
But the I would say that the feeling, I described it, the feeling of being out there was kind of like being like on the deck of an aircraft carrier. You have guys getting into cars, getting set up, and then being pulled up to like sort of a launch starting area.
Yeah,
we had instructors on walkie talkies, but not in the car.
No, that was different for Porsche. This was on the walkie talkie, but
then you'd pull up to the line, and when they told you it was time to go, it was go, 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 and you would launch. You would hit it hard and just like launch right off and jump back into the course.
Well run. You know, you don't know, am I supposed to brake torque or you don't want to be the guy that stuffs the car, right? And so that's I think the approach we both take. We don't need to be the fastest guy there. We just want to put in a good show and have fun. And you know, the car's new to us, so you know you don't want to push it too much.
Well, and so they gave us about three laps each, but in three different
surveys.
So you had a chance to kind of get used to the car, feel a little bit more comfortable in the second one. They were giving us some instruction in the tent at first, too, to kind of...
Yeah, heavy on the instruction, which was nice.
It was nice.
I appreciated it.
And the course was fun, I thought.
You
could get on.
You know, it's kind of what you expect.
Yeah.
Really, in stark contrast to the Porsche experience, just in the way the cars drove.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that a little bit. But these, of course, all-wheel drive, front engine. Do we know the horsepower on these?
Yeah, about three... It looks like I've seen different numbers, but somewhere around 370, 380.
Okay, all right.
About 360.
They're quick. They moved, but very, very pushy, these cars. And even the instructor said the American cars are set up to understeer more.
Yeah.
I get it. You know, we also don't have mandatory driver training and all the other stuff. So probably not a bad idea. But it was really a different driving experience than the Porsche. I feel like we're going about the same speed, but a lot more tire noise. These cars had the Michelin Pilot 4Ss.
Yeah.
You know, it's what you get with an all-wheel drive front engine. Remind me of when I had a B7 S4, that sort of experience. All these were a little quicker, I think, but I'm sure they were a little quicker. But Nice car, beautiful car. I mean, these cars, I always thought they look in the magazines like kind of like the new Mustang with big nostrils, and in person they work much better. They look smaller in person, mm-hmm. just a little better, a little more cohesive.
Yeah, a little more athletic, yeah. A little more sleek, I think, in person. I hadn't really thought of them in that way when I see them in the pictures and and online and stuff like that. But yeah, the nostrils, yeah, it's still something I wish they would change, but
yeah.
it is much more digestible in real life.
Yeah.
It's definitely not as harsh.
But it was...
And with the license, they had American-sized license plates.
Kind of broke up the expanse.
Breaks up, between the top and the bottom.
So. And we met some really nice enthusiasts while we were there. Like I said, there was a great parking lot. We should have stood in the parking lot and met, try to match people to their cars or something. Met some nice people, and the consensus seemed to be that no one is really a fan of these nostrils, and they think by the time of facelift, they'll probably rectify it. But at the same time,
if they don't, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd buy one, but they certainly look better in person, and... But really well-run event. It was a nice day here in Denver, and that it was cloudy and a little cooler, so it wasn't 100 degrees out in the parking lot like sometimes is.
We were in the first group of the day for the autocross.
Fresh tires.
Nice. So the tires hopefully in best shape. We were actually ideal because we were at the end of our individual group, but we were the first group out. So it's like we were kind of getting the cars already warmed up a little bit. Tires were optimal temperature.
And there were three components to this experience. There was the autocross. There was a drag race set up between SUVs. So you could drive. Was that the X5 hybrid? Was that what we were driving? I don't even know.
I think it was a 4.
I should be taking notes like a good automotive journalist. It was. You could pit that against the Lexus hybrid. I guess what is that? The 350.
The RX.
RX. The egg shaped one.
Yeah, the RX hybrid.
And also the
Volvo
XC90. I didn't get a chance to drive that one back to back, but it was fun. It's fun to smash the gas on anything and then slam on the brakes. And you tried to stop in the box.
We'll talk about that for a sec because it'll be easier to talk about. Yeah, they had it set up with you pulled up. They had a big lights, like a square light.
Like a drag strip.
Exactly. Yeah, well, except it wasn't like a Christmas tree.
No, it wasn't a Christmas tree.
But it was like a big square, red light, when they wanted to hold you and then it turned green. And what the idea is that they wanted you to go just mash on the throttle and go in a straight line, but they wanted you to stop in this specific box.
Uh-huh.
And that was the first person who came to a complete stop was the one who won. On the first race, I was in the BMW.
Yeah, the faster car.
You were in the Eggmobile, and I definitely had you beat and then stopped in the wrong spot. I had enough time, but I was so far ahead of you, I almost had time to hit the gas again, get into the right box, but then you had actually
The Lexus was no competitor to the X5.
Yeah.
Not just the power.
This was the only way that the Lexus was going to beat that BMW.
Yeah, just real wallowy compared to the BMW. Oh, yeah. And who knows what the suspension was, and there might not even be a setting on the Lexus, but would have been a great all-around car, but as far as a drag race, the BMW, apparently the XC90 hybrids was quite the sleeper.
They said we didn't get a chance to test it out, but they said the XC90 was no slouch and kept up pretty well with it. But the Lexus is, that's not what the Lexus purpose is.
The Volvo seemed to have a little more trouble stopping than the BMW, too. But it was fun. And then they had a component where you could basically pick, I think, that about a dozen models.
Yeah, a big selection of
no full bore M models or anything, but I drove an M. 850 or an 850 IM or whatever it is, the big daddy convertible. I should have checked all the specs, paid more attention, but I'm guessing this is a 500 horsepower car, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot. It was all black.
Mm-hmm.
Reminded me a little bit of the all black Mustang GT convertible we had rented a while back. The one that kissed my original Cayman's right on the bumper. Anyway, it was kind of that impression. It wasn't a sports car so much. I mean, obviously it's a better car in every way, but it's a big muscle car.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of power. You took out the...
I took out a
The new 2 series, right?
It's the new 2 M series. Not the
235,
but the M233i.
235.
XI, sorry.
M235i.
I sometimes struggle with the BMW.
No, I, yeah, we're...
Yeah,
well, we,
no, it was 2, yeah, 2330XI.
235.
Oh, 235.
I do know, but...
You're right.
No, it's... And that's what I probably would have driven if you hadn't chosen it. That was the most sort of enthusiast.
We wanted to give our audience a little variety here of experiences.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely. I mean, I'm of the BMW range. The 2 Series is the one that intrigues me the most.
Yeah.
And this is again.
This is the 4-door.
Much like the cars we were driving on the autocross course.
Yeah.
This is the step right below a full bore.
I think so.
M2.
Yeah. 300 horsepower.
331 pounds per. feet of torque. It's a 2-liter four-cylinder turbocharged engine. And to me, it kind of felt like a little bit of a rally car feel to it. Sort of rally, you know.
It was
snorting and popping. All artificial, but like it was kind of giving me those kind of like snorty sounds.
Nice 90s Pontiac teal exterior color.
Yeah, I didn't love it. I wouldn't pick that per se, but it's a good looking car. I mean, it looks as aggressive as the current M2 does. Now the current M2 is still the last generation.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with you there. I think the current M2 is a little more, I don't know. I think partly because it's a two door, right?
That's true.
But this is close.
I think this is pretty close. Yeah. And so, I mean, when they introduced the M2 version of this, I think it's going to be really aggressive.
I think so. But it'll be a four door, right?
I don't know. So
Someone tell us.
I happen to drive a four door. I don't know if they're also going to offer a two door for that body style. But I did read recently that BMW announced that there will be manual options for it,
which is fantastic.
And it doesn't have the big nostrils on the
front. No, which is interesting.
Conventional, BMW,
much more attractive.
Nozzles,
I think.
Yeah.
So. Well, it was. Yeah. Just call them nozzles. Because that's kind of what there are.
Kind of nozzly. Beaver teeth nozzles.
I mean, and actually, they don't even really look like nostrils. They do look like beaver teeth when you see it in person. But you know what? It's what it is. Even the people working there sort of seem to acknowledge it's not people's favorite aspect of the car.
Yeah.
But fantastic cars.
They'd much rather focus on the driving aspect.
It'd been in a, you know, we're, I guess, more Porsche guys. And there were people there that we talked with that were sort of our equivalent for BMW. They knew all the codes and stuff like we are with Porsche. Yeah. And, you know, I've owned a BMW. It's been a long time ago now. But
remind the audience what you used.
An 81 320i, which couldn't be further from the cars we drove today if you tried. But I do like BMWs. I've not owned one since I was young. And I don't keep up on it like Porsche, maybe some of the others. But
there's a lot of codes and numbers.
A lot of codes, people were like filling in the blanks for us when we were talking with them, which is cool. Some of the folks, I know we met Austin, who's the other guy we were talking to there at the end, who drives a red Cayman. I can't remember your name.
Yeah,
really enjoyed talking with you. Reach out to us, both of you.
Yeah.
But get you a T-shirt if nothing else. My biggest takeaway, Doug, was that these cars, you're getting around the track fast, but I feel like the car was doing a lot more work for you than it would in a Porsche, you know? Sometimes it takes stepping out of, say, something like a GT4 and into something else that's ostensibly in the sort of same area code, at least as far as intent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you realize really how pure a GT4 is, or even a base Cayman, right? Mm-hmm. How little the relative to, say, the BMWs the car was doing for you. I always felt like, well, when we were driving the Porsches on a very similar course there, I felt like you could lose it if you weren't paying attention. I feel like unless you're really cooking it, really pushing hard, the car was probably going to save you, the BMW. I feel like the electric, we drove in sport, but I guess the big distinction for me was when we were standing watching the Porsches go on the track, didn't hear a lot of tire squeal.
Yes,
it was constant tire squeal, which tells me the cars are understeering, they're pushing. It's just a...
I think that's a reflective of the basic architecture of the Porsche.
Yeah, well, right. You can't get around it.
Yeah, they're starting from a better platform. I think it might also be a little bit of the fact that you did have that Porsche guy in the passenger seat next to you. I think that reined some people.
Yes.
But I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think BMW does a lot of work to make a sedan style vehicle with a traditional engine layout in the front, extra seats in the back, perform as high as it possibly can. So there's the suspension and the electronic aids are doing a lot more to aid you to get you to around that corner as quickly. And there is more tire.
That's
spindle.
It. I think the performance is more dependent on the electronics than it is in the Porsche.
As you were saying that, it would make me wonder like what could BMW do if they decided they wanted to get into like they wanted to make like a true
mid-engine competitor.
Like if they started at a mid-engine platform. But
I wonder if they'd ever do that.
I don't know. Probably the business wise, it doesn't really pencil out for them. But you were saying though that you felt like the BMW was going to stop you from having any sort of like incidents. We did see a few people.
We did.
Who took out some.
So it is possible. It's not going to save you.
It is possible. I was waiting when I was sort of waiting in the starting block, which in my aircraft carrier analogy is like sort of being like on the catapult ready to launch.
Yeah.
they held me for a while because a guy came through and took about five or six cones.
That happens several times. Yeah. And no harm, no foul. I mean, that's sort of what these
cones.
Are for.
Yeah, it's cones.
But, and, you know, probably better to hit the cones than pull it back
posts,
a notch.
The light posts that were out there. You know,
what's it? Oh, well, yeah, you don't want to hit one of the light posts. But it was really interesting. I thought there was... Don't get me wrong. These are great cars, and I had as much fun today as I did with the Porsche driving experience, but the road feel is not there in any of the models we drove today.
That's fair.
I think the 440 that we drove around the autocross course had pretty good road feel, but then I got in that 850, and it's just, it's like a big Cadillac, you know, with a lot of power. It's just not, you do not have that direct connection, you know, that all the journalists talk about. You do not have that direct connection to the road that you do in the Porsche. At least that's the impression that I got today.
Yeah.
But again, different strokes for different folks. And I tell you which car I'd rather drive across the country, and it's not the Cayman.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it does what it does very well.
It does. And you know, if you're needing, yeah, in my situation, the way
I'm talking specifically about the 440, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in my life situation, I mean, like a car with two extra seats in it is like a big bonus for me.
Yeah.
And so that is a car that I would never buy that thinking it's like my ultimate driving tool, like
sure.
My ultimate like weekend car, my ultimate you know, sports car thing, the special occasion.
But it gets you 90% there.
And I'd be able to use it as a daily driver.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would definitely feel like if the road ahead of me turned into something fun, I wouldn't feel cheated if I only had that car. But
arguably better cars, if not the better sports car.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. Yeah, they're sports sedans. The BMW is sports sedans.
No, a lot of Porsche guys there. You know, like I said, and I feel terrible. I just mentioned, I've already forgotten your name, with the red 987.
Yeah.
You know, he was one. I saw other people with Porsche things on, and just there were you know.
There's a lot of crossover.
Yeah, there's a lot of, course,
there's,
right?
I mean, it's, arguably, Porsche and BMW are two of the brands that are the most... I would argue the two of the most like driver-oriented, you know, car companies.
Yeah.
Even though obviously BMW makes a lot of cars for non-drivers, you know, they're just regular people. But there's a bit of a driving spirit in almost everything they make.
Absolutely.
And certainly when you get up into the sort of M-level cars, you know, either the full-spec M or these sort of new M.
Yeah.
M then plus the number, you know, cars. So.
And didn't both the M3 they had there, the manual, that we couldn't drive, unfortunately, that had... Pilot 4S tires, as did the 440s that we were driving.
Yeah.
And it's one of my favorite tires.
I forgot to check the 2 Series, but it had something good on it.
Yeah, too, so. Which is nice to see, too, that they're actually putting good tires. And in fact, I think what the distinction is on the 440, I believe that's part of a track pack. I believe that by default, they come with all seasons. Mm-hmm. And that would have been a whole other experience. I should say that the surface we were on was a tar-sealed asphalt surface, so not a particularly high-grip surface.
Mm-hmm.
And so that probably changed the dynamics a little bit, too.
Yeah.
But it's just, you're basically going after the same goal, just two very different ways of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's but they're great cars. They're well-built. They seem solid.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing.
And they're quick.
I mean, it's...
I mean, we were launching really hard, I thought.
And sometimes it's okay to, like, be a little insulated from every little, you know, tar strip or you know...
Yeah.
Dip in the road.
With the two that I took out, the 2330, 335?
I think it's
330.
235IM, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
I took a picture.
I'll call it the two.
Yeah.
That I did put it into, and we were, and the loop they had us go on took us on some really terrible roads even. And,
Federal Boulevard,
Federal
if you know
Boulevard,
Denver, west of, potholes and, yeah.
Yeah, I've been on dirt roads that are smoother than that one. But then did you go on the highway?
I did.
Yeah, I went on the highway, so. I played around with the sport settings on it with the suspension, and I could tell a difference.
Do you think it was sportier still, than the four?
It was at least in the same. It was at least at the same.
A little level. Less power, but you've
definitely
got a little less
power.
Size.
Yeah,
too.
Little less power. Yeah. I didn't get. When I stepped on it, I didn't. It was quick, but not like it didn't like blow me out of my
car
kind of quick. Although at times I thought it wasn't really responding, and I realized I looked down and I realized I was going, you know, 82 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So it definitely carries some speed, but. You know, that's that to me, I got out of that car and I said, that's, you know, my closest equivalent to this is like an adult version of an STI or W.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it
that's
felt
a good
like.
That's a good place to be.
It's a good place to be. I was kind of intrigued by it. I don't think we went over that before, but what do you think the MSRP is on that?
On the two, did you know?
I looked it up before we started.
52. So.
45.
Oh, okay. Is it?
So as 45. That's MSRP, but then I don't know.
Oh, so basically.
I don't know what my car had on it per
okay,
se.
Okay, so I'm probably mid 50s.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, and when you take into consideration a current 2 Series is about the size of a 5 Series from 15 years ago, right?
Well, it's definitely small. It's a true four-door sedan, but it's small.
I got into a 3 Series was.
I got into the back seat, and you could put adults in it for around town, but you wouldn't want to put it in.
Is this a car you would consider for yourself, though?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah? No. Okay. I would definitely put it on the list. I mean, the M2 is always the one everyone's shooting for, but I don't know. I thought there might be some, although it's priced almost sort of like where a slightly used M2 is.
Well, and that's
the dilemma, I guess. But
what else was in that lot? Because I saw that the M2, I think it was the CS, right? It was the blue. There were two BMW wagons. One was a diesel. This yellow S4, which is really nice. There's an S5.
I saw an E36 Generation 3 Series. It might have been an M3, but it was definitely done up like Fast and Furious style.
Yeah.
Like green and with a big spoiler on the back.
Nice gold F80 M4 was there. If you happen to be listening, Doug was sporting a steering committee T-shirt today.
Yeah. So if anyone we talk to wants to reach out to us,
if any of you met, drop us a line.
You can reach us at. We should give out the email again.
Let's do it.
Steering Committee Podcast@gmail.com. Again, the Steering Committee Podcast at gmail.com.
I know it's a lot of typing, but
look for us on Instagram. You can message me there. It's the Steering Committee IG,
and that's all. Instagram. And that is all, Doug.
That's all. Yeah, reach out to me there, and if. Like I said, we talked to that nice guy.
Yeah, we talked to several people.
987, and he had another interesting car. We'd love to have you.
Yeah. So. And maybe some of these people even end up as guests someday.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But friendly group, really. Yeah. That parking lot killed me. There was some great stuff.
There was some good stuff there.
You know, and anyway, but it was a good event. I think we should probably take a quick break. We're at 20 minutes, and we'll be back.
Sounds good. Back. So we kind of gave a sort of a big overview of the experience.
Doug, not to interrupt, we're not at Bruce Beers today.
We are not.
We are in my yard.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, it's too early to be at Bruce Beers.
And we tried. Don't worry.
Recording early. Yeah, if they would let us in this early, we would go drink.
Sorry,
some beers,
I just wanted to mention, in case you were wondering why I was so quiet.
Yeah, it's a little quieter today. So we're sadly without our beloved sponsor, Bruce Beers.
So the words aren't going to come quite as easily.
Purveyors of badass Belgian beers. So,
and I am never happier than when I'm sitting there at Bruce Beers in our little alcove there with my beer. We order from Choice Market. Get a nice, it's like a fancy little airline meal that comes, steak and potatoes. I think it's the best.
Good. It's always high quality food, and the beer is just incredible. Yeah, lately I've been sort of having that that left-hand lady is a good summertime sort of Belgian-style beers.
Anyway, I just wanted to, but apparently we're under the flight path today, so that's the noise we're dealing with today.
Make a little flight background noise.
Yeah.
So we gave like a good overview of the event, what we did.
So there's three elements. Let's set this up again. There was the autocross section. There was a drag race section. There were a few display cars, but then the third thing was you could take a car out for 20 minutes or whatever. And they had just pretty much anything in the current lineup or some variation.
Everything just below the full-blown M-spec cars was available.
But it was the autocross that I think most people were there for.
That was the best part for the car, yeah.
And so we did three sets of three laps.
Yep.
And we both commented on how we improved noticeably through each.
Absolutely, yeah. I felt much more, I mean, the first time around, first of all, you're seeing the course for the first time.
Yeah, the car's new. Right.
The first time around, you don't even know how sharp any of the corners are.
They show you the map or whatever, the track, but I'm not one of those people that can take a picture.
And our guy there, I can't think of his name, he was giving us instruction and talking about like how to go into each corner, but after the third or fourth one, I was completely zoned out.
Sure.
So, first time through, I took it pretty easy, but and I couldn't really quite hear. I couldn't hear my instructor as well on the
The instructors, you were all great. I just
had a little trouble hearing you.
There's the cars are loud. You hear the tires, the engine.
Windows are down. You could hear other tires squealing. You could hear other, and you're really concentrating. You're trying not to. You're trying to, you know, get through this course without, you know.
Well, each car is a little
bending
different
the car around
too.
The pole, so.
Maybe the tire wear is different. One of the cars again had a heads up display, which I found really distracting for that kind of. But I didn't.
Which one was that?
I think it was the white one I drove. I could be wrong. Maybe it was white or the blue one, but that was a little distracting. But I didn't, you know, you don't have time to figure out how to turn it off, and we drove in. But I want to set a baseline. These were all the same cars.
Yeah,
some of them were a little different, but I think it probably had, you know, his tires warmed up or cooled down or were worn. They should have been all the same, like
pretty much
all sport.
Out the block, they should have been the same. But it's kind of like when you go to a go kart track. Sometimes some are a little more abused than others.
Some are going to always be a little quicker than others, right?
So because I felt like that green car might have been a little faster than the white car that I think I drove the white car twice.
Yeah.
I think it was the first in the
I noticed some differences too.
I thought the green one just, I felt a little quicker in it right off the bat.
Which one had a oil change more recently? Which one has better tire pressure? I'm sure there, a million in cars.
A little variables.
Cars are different too, right?
I kind of feel bad for these cars. They're just getting, they get thrashed.
Well, Doug, for this. See, here, I was thinking maybe this is your in. It can.
Well, I would definitely buy, I would buy one though. I would still buy one.
Yeah.
I, you know, if that made the difference.
The price would have to be right.
Yeah, definitely. Someone asked about what they do with them, and they said these cars go on this full tour for 18 cities all across America. So if you're listening to this somewhere not in Denver, and this event comes up into your local city, we highly recommend
it.
You definitely sign up. It's free.
But
you sign up through Facebook, and it was pretty easy. So,
don't go get food from a drive-up window. Pick up liquor. We heard some stories. I don't know if we should be saying this, but we were talking to some of these guys behind the scenes. Apparently, just be on your best behavior. They're giving you something, you know, cost you nothing. Least you can do is be respectful.
Yeah, you know, if you guys abuse this, we can't have nice things, and they won't do this for us.
And I hope I'm not oversharing here, but the story of someone took out the car that, and I'm sorry, we have to come back to our improvement session to session, but I took out, much like you took the 2 Series out just for the street drive, I took out an 850 or an M850i convertible. Mm-hmm. And don't get me started on the crystal shifter, that really unattractive BMW. It's not an Aston Martin. I saw that on that in the X5.
I was going to ask you if that was the same one that was in your other car.
It really did not.
It looked a little,
I think it was plastic. It just didn't, it was, it was just like it looked like one of those weird like air fresheners you see plugged in a taxi or something. It just didn't do anything for me. BMW, but apparently some of this car that I took out got caught in a rainstorm, got scared, drove it to their car, took off, left the car parked with the top down.
I mean, with the top down,
that's people. Yeah.
So,
anyway, back to the individual driving sessions and how you improved and I improved.
I sort of took to heart what they said to kind of let. You know, just be on the gas and then just do one sort of strong dab of the brake, ready to come off, and then just set the car up and let it really just let it come out of the corner.
I don't want to say it does it for you, but it definitely nudges you.
It helps you a lot.
It's intuitive.
Yeah, it's intuitive. And the more I trusted in it, the more I think the smoother I got. I don't know if I necessarily got faster, but I definitely feel like I got much smoother as the day went
on. So, no, I think I got both of those things. I mean, I think, you know, the first one, I couldn't hear the instructor very well, and I think I came in early or something. And then so at least by the second time, I felt like I was kind of in command of the situation. I kind of knew where to exit, where the I felt much better by the second.
And there might be something to be said. This is just a new thought in my head right now. So with the Porsches, I definitely feel like I am far below what the Porsche's capabilities are.
Sure.
So I'm not pushing that car very far. But with the BMW, I feel like because of the it's definitely working a little bit harder. You can definitely sort of feel the car, you know, sort of dive in, getting the weight on the front, that kind of thing. You know, it's rolling just a little bit. By giving you some inputs, I wonder if you actually gain something from sort of feeling all that stuff at a lower point.
Sure, sure.
That you don't necessarily get until you're at a much faster speed in the Porsche.
It's just
so that you're getting kind of those inputs and you're getting kind of like that feel.
And like we discussed, at the end of the day, you can't. I mean, just from a physics perspective, a mid-engine's about as good as it's going to get.
Yeah.
In most regards, every configuration has their weak point.
All you have to look at is you know. Formula One, which could have done it any way they wanted to, once as soon as they switched over to mid-engine, has never gone back.
Well, just look at the new Corvette. Most hypercars are mid-engined at this point.
General Motors, one of the largest companies in the world, reached the limits of what they could do with a front-engine Corvette. So obviously, mid-engine has inherent advantages over it. But you know, I'm just thinking like, you know, because the car is working a little bit harder and it's giving you more input, maybe you're actually learning something from that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a little more communicative and a little more vocal, maybe.
More vocal and like I said, like when they talk about like the car diving and the car sort of and he talked about how we wanted to be. He wanted to hear a consistent screech
from
the tires, but not sort of on off, that kind of thing. And I feel like
a moan of pleasure instead of a scream of pain, right? Yeah. Okay, like that.
Something like that. Yeah. I feel like
that could have just been me, Doug. I don't know.
Maybe that was you. Yeah. Maybe that was from the wisdom of Ryan Barkey. But I feel like I had that. I feel like I had consistent sort of like, you know. Smoothness, I guess, through my laps.
I wish we could have timed those laps, actually.
Yeah.
And just had been able to quantify.
I feel like some guys were being pretty aggressive out there with that stopwatch. I feel like that might have made the difference between a couple of these cars getting binned or not.
But so, I think by the end, we both complimented, you know.
Yeah, I got some nice compliments.
Yeah,
I assumed I assume for me he was just saying that to make me feel good.
No.
But,
No, I felt really good by that last one. I felt like I wanted to stay out there. I just wanted to keep doing it. And it's a tight course. I mean, you know, obviously you're on a course that isn't so tight. You're not going to be killing the tires quite as much. But what about just sort of the general feel, like the car, the way things are laid out? What about that funky BMW shifter? These were automatics.
Yeah. So clearly, I feel like they know that there's a bit of an issue with that because
they make a big point.
We had to get a tutorial on it while we were sitting down.
Yeah.
And then get reminded again when we actually got into the car.
Yeah, that tells you something.
It tells you something about it. You have to. So basically to get it, it's when it's in park, you have to push a button on the side and flick it back and it goes into drive.
Yeah. It's better than a lot of newer cars I've driven.
I guess maybe I haven't driven enough newer cars
at least
to be bothered to know enough about it. So I would have to say that the
Taycan, I'm looking at you.
That's true. The Taycan, I was going to say the PDK that was on the Carrera and then on the,
fine.
On the Cayman were very intuitive, but the Taycan was not necessarily. That's, so.
But I thought that the car seemed high quality. It was nice to see they're spec'd with good tires.
Yeah.
You know, attractive for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, I certainly, I came away, I think, with a better impression. I mean, the last time I drove a BMW, I think was, or you know, a modern BMW is probably when I cross-shopped the M2 when it was relatively new, as was the 718 Cayman, and I ended up for many of these same reasons going with the Cayman. But I don't know. I walked away with probably a more favorable impression. I thought they put on a good show, good cars. I thought they did everything they could do, gave us some freedom, gave us some instruction.
Yeah.
No swag.
No.
Or are we supposed to check out or something? I don't think they were doing any bag, but there were a lot more people here than at the Porsche.
I guess that's so. We did get it. I feel like we got
Porsche had lunch. They had a little swag bag.
They had food for us. They had a nice swag bag for us. We got those inductive chargers. Do you use yours?
I do. It took me a hot minute to figure that out.
Okay. Yeah.
But now it seems to work great.
Okay.
I love it.
I use mine. It's my backup one, but I do use it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we got that nice Porsche magazine and then a nice Nalgene water bottle, which I've already lost, but
I've got mine. No, I thought it was great, but a T-shirt would have been great too.
A T-shirt would have been great, but I would have to say though that because the autocross was like much more like let's get some more laps in.
Hey,
and they were offering their BMW driving school as a product. I think they use that as like a, that's not just like a gimmick. I think that's a business they actually try and run. It got me thinking that I would like to do that.
And if anyone at BMW we met today happens to be listening,
and
there's maybe something we can do, work out something with the full driving experience or something. I know we'd love to do it, and we'd talk about it 10 episodes, I bet.
Exactly. It'd be a miniseries.
But I thought, again, much like the Porsche, really well done. When you sit and you really sort of get past the veneer of, you know, we're selling this something, you talk to some of these instructors and stuff, they really do know what they're talking about, and just smart, nice folks.
I have to emphasize, it didn't feel like this was like a... This didn't feel like it was a timeshare.
No, not at all. I didn't mean to imply.
We had to listen to 40 minutes of BMW speak before we could get in the cars. And I feel like they were definitely like, let's get out there, let's do some
driving.
Talk
to us like grown-ups.
Yeah, let's have some fun. I think they know that if you could do that and you give people a fun experience, they are more likely to consider this as a product. Which, you know, I definitely am now. It is on my radar.
Yeah.
Which it really wasn't.
Well, in your position, we've got three small kids, and you might have to haul them all in your fun car in a pinch.
Yeah.
Something like that M235, or even the... I've told you this for a long time. The previous generation, I've always really liked. I had a guy in one of those M235i's, or actually it was the all-wheel drive. It was either 235 or the 240. I think they switched at the facelift, who... gave me a pretty good fight up Golden Gate Candy one time in the Cayman, the base Cayman. So
they're good
cars.
And it's nice that, you know, because I am in this sort of world where I have to consider, you know, possibly being in a situation where I have five people in the car, including myself. Yeah. Unfortunately, the 911, I can't do that. Technically.
No.
And the BMWs, although it's small, they do, most of them all have three seatbelts in the back.
Yep.
So
can we talk about how every YouTube video guy, whenever they do a Porsche, they feel compelled to sit in the frunk? What is that?
Yeah. I don't know.
Because I joked about you could throw one of your kids in the frunk and then you'd have room, right?
Yeah,
but I promise you, viewers, we will never, or
we'll
viewers,
never
listeners,
we'll
if we ever make it to YouTube, we will never do that. That drives me nuts. I don't understand the compulsion for like a 200-pound man to like
try to fit himself into the front of a Porsche 911.
I don't need that's just filler. I don't need that.
We won't do that.
No. Let's get to the driving. Anyway, but you felt and bouncing around here, but you felt to me that was sort of the point of this. You get in the car, you're not comfortable with it, but you get out there, you sort of get the lay of the land. By the second time you go out, it's feeling pretty good. And by the third time, you're just like squealing those tires the whole way around. I mean, it was.
And maybe he was being nice, but I had the same instructor for my first and my third one, and maybe he did actually remember me. He did say like, "Oh, you did a lot better." Like,
well, and I think that's it. You know, they like to see that. Then you're listening, and you know, we've talked about this before. I am not the kind of learner where someone shouting stuff in my ear is going to teach me. Mm-hmm. I need to sort of get some guidelines and figure it out on my own. So it's something I've always struggled with driving instruction. I've never, you know, I've gone out with an instructor and you know, the track and you know, I always take something away, but it's just not how I learn. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not one of those people that can open a driving book, you know, and look at the equations and the apex, how you know the formula for the apex and all that. So this was nice because yes, they were offering some suggestion, but you actually got to go out and make your own mistakes. And to me,
play around with it a little bit.
Yeah, that's a better way to learn. You know, I mean, you're given some general instruction, do this, do that, whatever. And again, you're talking to a range of abilities. You're talking to people who have never done anything like that.
Yeah.
To people who probably are track rats. So
the way these things are set up, someone could be walking in to this event, having just been minted a new driver in the state of Colorado, you know, 16 years old, you know, they have no idea what they're getting there. To someone who, like you said, has like tons of track day experience or autocross experience, that kind of thing. So,
right.
And I think there was a relatively
did a really good
wide spectrum of people.
And they're doing it over the radio too, the walkie talkie. That can't be easy.
That was definitely something that they do because of COVID protocol, but they would probably normally be right there in the seat with you.
Yeah, that was good. It was good. Yeah, so. What else? Is there anything else? Any other takeaways here?
From the event? No, but I'm going to look into that. This new 2 series that's coming out, I'm kind of intrigued with.
That's my biggest takeaway. Yeah. The simpler and cheaper the new BMW, the more I will probably like it.
I always like this. I like to get the biggest engine I can get in the smallest car, and that two series is kind of that sweet spot for me.
I don't want a heads up display. I don't want a crystal shifter. Yeah. And now that was more on the luxury cars than the sports cars, but
yeah.
I do not need most of that stuff. I just don't. And that's again why I bought the base Cayman. It's why I bought the GT4. These two cars have had probably the least amount of that stuff. Probably what's legally mandated. You have to have some sort of traction control. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, there's not much. You're sort of on your own. And I guess just my driving philosophy, that's what resonates with me. And I guess I put my money where my mouth is.
Yeah.
But if I needed something that was a little more daily drivable, sure, BMW makes a lot of sense. I mean, these really, really fast cars, really good cars.
Yeah.
Glad they weren't my tires. And isn't it so much more fun driving someone else's car? Oh, yeah, I mean, really, absolutely. At the end of the day, or not a friend's where there's a liability there.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I'm happy to beat the snot out of a corporation's car any day.
Well, and to feel like you were being encouraged to. It's not like we were just like abusing it. They were like, go nuts.
That's it. I remember years ago going to one of these Lexus driving day or whatever. And I've never owned a Lexus. I probably never will. Very similar. And they were very, very sort of, you know, restrictive. Mm-hmm. As long as you don't stuff the thing, I think you were in good shape. They were very permissive, and I appreciated that. And
they gave us a wide latitude. I've heard someone say this, you know, they should act that way, because although I know it costs money, but BMW literally has a factory set up to reproduce one of these cars if they actually get bid. They can literally push a button and get another one of these to come out of their big 3D printer, factory.
If only it were that easy, but that's
what I'm saying, though. Obviously that's a cost, and if they do that too much, that becomes a problem. But the point is that each of these cars is absolutely replaceable by these people. Very specific people can actually do it.
But, too, the expense that, you know, these, I'm always amazed at what these things must cost. You count the number of people working there, just the rental of the space, the setup, the logistics of transporting these cars from location to location.
They
fly these people in from all their home cities. I mean, I know a lot of this is done by a third party or whatever, but I thought it was really well done.
It's really done. So if you see it coming up on your radar in your city, you should definitely sign up.
Yes, and
it's a lot of fun.
If you are thinking about doing the actual driving experience at the, I want to say Porsche Center, it's the Spartanburg I think there are a couple South of others.
Carolina, there was one in Palm Springs,
yeah,
California, and they
maybe
said
one
and they
popping
said
up in Indianapolis.
Pop up one in Indianapolis.
Yeah, which means yes.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you are thinking about ever doing that full bore, full day or multi day thing, come to one of these first because I think it'll give you a little taste and you get 20% off. So
that's true. Yeah,
that's my little plug for our friends at BMW.
If you go there the day of, they'll give you a 20% coupon off for the full driving school.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, thank you, BMW. Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah.
We always enjoy these. What'll be next? So we did Porsche.
And I think I would do that. I would do that again when it comes to through town next.
Unfortunately, week, I don't think Ferrari offers anything quite like this. At least not for us non-owners. But
No, they sell all the cars they make.
But I would do anything. I would do Kia. I would do a Honda. I don't feel like they do that kind of stuff, and they should. It's more to the performance.
Especially a company like Kia that's trying to like sort of beef up its production in this territory. Yeah. They should absolutely do something like
this. It was great.
But, you know, Ferrari, what Ferrari does, which I know they when they added it back in the 90s or late 80s when they did the challenge.
The challenge.
Series,
well, it started with the 355, I think, right? Or the 348.
348 I think.
Yeah, okay,
the 348 was the first
I remember
one
seeing a couple of those races at Road America.
Yeah. So we're talking about a different level of sort of customer experience.
Well, see, that's what I want to see right here.
Yeah.
Now I can finally qualify. I can probably afford a 348. I want to go race against other 348s now where everything is simple. It's a manual transmission or whatever. That would be much like almost a vintage challenge series.
Because as the car models change, they would always allow, they would always be, I saw it was a support race for the Formula One race I used to go to in Montreal. And you notice like if they were sort of in within a year or two of the model changeover, there would still be guys out there with the old one and then the new one. So I saw 1 year where the 355 was still out there with the new 360s and.
Oh yeah, that was always kind of cool too.
Yeah,
you root for the old car just automatically.
Oh yeah, and then that particular one, I mean that 355 sounded so much better. Than
those cars would get so beaten up though. I remember.
Oh yeah,
it was kind of fun to see, but.
It'd be nice if you could collect sort of the old 348 Challenge and still go race that with some other guys.
And I think at least when that started, I could be way wrong, but I want to say maybe those first cars were still street legal. Or could have been they started with a street legal car, which meant they could be retrofitted.
They did, but it, I mean,
the new ones.
It was pulled off the assembly line. I don't.
Was it as a challenge?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, it started life off as it wasn't a purpose built race car. It was like a 355 they pull off and then they put the stuff on.
I feel like people street 355 and 360 challenges.
I think people do, but I don't think it's strictly speaking legal.
Okay. All right.
So,
well, we have some more race talk. You want to take a quick break and
we'll take a quick break.
Yeah, okay.
Come back and talk racing again in a sec. So. All right, we're back, and we're doing a little follow-up work. We are so customer-oriented that we are going to follow up with our question and just make sure we get to the right answer.
Yeah, it's
set this up for us.
Yeah, it's no what's not letters to Zuck. What's the on Spike Show? It's the
it's a real insurance
story. Real insurance story. It's not quite there, but we do like to respond to reader.
We're a boutique
listener
podcast,
mail.
We can do some real specific targeting
in the business world. It's referred to as being agile, right?
Yeah,
and that's what we are. So we have a listener, Scott, out of Evanston, Illinois, who had a question about F1, and I didn't read the whole thing or didn't read it correctly. He was referring to the Austrian Grand Prix. You thought he was talking about the British.
Yeah, I think his question in general was just about like, do you think that the authority that basically governs the Formula One races, are they intervening too much and changing the sport, and you know, are they causing a problem and getting away from actual racing. We clarified what he's referring to is there's two races in the same racetrack in Austria. One is technically the Austrian Grand Prix. One is actually like the Red Bull Grand Prix.
Wait, but are they both F1 full bore
back to back, and they're like consecutive weekends?
Well, that's just whack, Doug.
Well, they did it. I think they did it last year during COVID because it was they basically put everyone through the COVID protocol once.
Yeah,
kept them
I
there
see.
For one more week, and then so they got two races.
Sorry, is this my Honda Ruckus coming down there? Oh no, that's one of those. Vintage bikes that
like
had the Wizard. The Wizard, Wizard.
Used
to see,
I
want to change.
The last time I came over here, I saw it.
I've never seen him, but you've seen.
So.
I want to come back to the Honda Ruckus later. But
We'll revisit that.
Yeah.
I think what he was referring to is there's specifically an incident where, I think he said Perez was penalized for running someone else off the track.
Yeah.
Perez was running off the track, basically.
Norris.
Yeah. Oh,
Norris
Lando,
penalty for forcing
Lando
Perez
off
track.
Lando Norris, who's a young driver for the McLaren team, was penalized for forcing Sergio Perez off. Perez is a little bit more experienced driver on the Red Bull team.
I see.
So it's two. It's kind of two, it's Red Bull and Mercedes are considered the two top teams. McLaren is a team that's kind of like
sure.
nipping at their heels right mm-hmm. now. So, and Lando Norris is kind of considered this young upstart, you know, or young up and coming, you know, future, you know, all star driver, basically. Yeah, I do recall that was a weekend where there was a lot of discussion of like what he's talking about, where it's, you know, what the tracks are designed. They have large runoff areas. So that it's for safety reasons, but the point is that now because it's track you can actually drive on.
I see.
They have to have very specific rules about what's considered track limits and what's on the track and what's off the track.
Like where the stripe kind
yeah.
of.
So what happened here was that it was arguably Lando Norris forcing the line and forcing Sergio Perez off. He didn't crash. He didn't have to go into a gravel trap or anything like that. But they ended up penalizing Lando Norris for it. I mean, it still all comes back to the same thing of like, what are we doing here? Like, you know, is this racing or is this not racing? Are we trying to make rules to stop that or not? How do we?
A lot of strong personalities.
The worst driver on the F1 circuit is one of the most competitive people you'll ever meet.
Right.
They all want to win. They all.
The worst driver is so much better than any us or anyone listening, probably. That.
Yeah. Although Nikita Mazepin might be an exception to that, but we'll.
Oh, I thought he might be listening. Okay. Let's send him a T-shirt, Doug.
No, he's an.
I'm gonna guess it's a small.
He's an example of one of these guys where his father happens.
I know the guy. Well,
suddenly that team had a new sponsor.
For those of us born with stainless steel spoons in our mouths,
And there's some speculation that he may have been jumped up a little too early, right up into Formula One, as opposed to coming up to the ladder system a little bit more. So,
hey, it's a story as old as time, right?
I would argue even he is a far significantly better driver than I'll ever be. So, it's definitely a tough balance act to follow, and I don't know exactly how to do it right, because I think it would be nice to see these guys race and to see someone sort of force themselves in. And, you know, I mean, there's still a lot of controversy coming out of the Silverstone race. The Hungarian Grand Prix has already happened. I have not, as we sit here, I have not watched it. I've recorded it. I know from qualifying that Lewis Hamilton was on pole. His co-driver Valtteri Bottas was second, and Max is in third. And you know, there's really some concern that, like, you know, that was sort of a desperate move by Hamilton to try and make that happen, and that now that's going to swing the tide of the whole championship. You know, will Verstappen be nervous going into a corner wheel to wheel with Hamilton
again?
So there's some gamemanship going on, you know?
Do you ever see these things they have, I think generally aimed toward women, but basically like, we're going to teach you enough about football so you can enjoy watching it with your spouse, right?
Oh, no, I hadn't seen
that. So they teach you the basics, you know, just about downs and, scoring and all that.
Yeah.
I need something like that for F1 because I feel like I could get really into it, but it can be intimidating. Like, you need to...
Yeah, it's more fun. I think it's always more fun to watch with someone who knows what's going on and can explain.
You know what racing I like, Doug?
What do you like?
Like the Goodwood Revival.
That's very black and white.
I appreciate that. You know, the worst thing that happens, you run into one of those straw bales or hay bales or whatever they have.
No, the worst thing that can happen is that you bin one of those.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Tens of million dollar person.
Yes, and it happens every year, and it's kind of brilliant. But anyway,
Well, maybe one day we'll sit. I'll sit down with you, and we will watch a race.
Yeah,
and we'll record.
Maybe one day we'll sit down with our listener Scott, because I know Scott's got some opinions. I think he'd be a great guest sometime.
I'd love to do that with him. So
I know we're on a bit of a schedule.
We are, yeah. And then Scott, I'm sorry, I'm not sure if I really fully answered your question, but I don't know what the answer to that is overall. I think I would err more on the side of letting the drivers drive.
Yeah.
So
okay.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, yeah. On that bombshell.
Yeah. There we go.
Brews Beers, visit them online, brewsbeers.com. When in Denver, visit them. We like the Brews on Facts location, but there's also another location on the northwest side. Mm-hmm. Both are great.
And then thank you to BMW and the BMW.
Yeah, thank you, BMW.
Experience.
That was really a lot of fun. Yeah. So we look forward to doing that again.
All right. Well, until next time.
Thank you.
Yeah.